Good evening. I would like to call the House Ways and Means Committee in order. Today is February 1st, 2023. Let the record reflect that the time is 6:01 p.m. Today we have Representative Jamie Allard, Representative Tom McKay, Representative Cliff Groh, myself, Chair Ben Carpenter. And also in the room with us, we have Senator Schauer, Senator Kawasaki, Representative Gray, Senator Shelley Hughes, Senator Rob Meyer, Representative Dan Ortiz. And is there anybody in the back row that I am not seeing? All right. Thank you all for coming tonight. Let's see. I'd like to remind committee members and those in the audience, please silence or turn off your phones. That way we won't have any embarrassing rings come out. Staff tonight that will be assisting us will be Shannon McCain and Jordan Wright with the House Records and Zachary Lawthorne with the LIO. Thank you for being here this evening. My staff, Kendra Broussard, will be the committee aide. We have one item on tonight's agenda. The committee will hear an overview of the 2021 Fiscal Policy Working Group's final report and a discussion from members of the working group. As a background here for those in the room and those watching, the Fiscal Policy Working Group was established in June 2021 by leadership of the 32nd legislature, who recognized that there was a need for a long-term fiscal plan for Alaska. The working group was created as a bicameral, bipartisan group and given the following charge, and I'm quoting here. We were to develop a policy recommendations that will provide fiscal certainty to Alaskans into the future through means of achieving a balanced budget and resolving the annual dispute over the permanent fund dividend, unquote. We have invited all the members of the Fiscal Policy Working Group to join us tonight, and a few of the members were able to join to make it. The intent here is to kind of have a discussion on the Fiscal Policy Working Group. As a member of the working group, I can convey the depth of thought and spirit of compromise that went into developing a bipartisan and bicameral report. And let the record reflect that Representative McCabe has joined us at 6:03. I also understand that there will be more than one perspective on the report present tonight. As our members experience with a diversity of opinions through that report. So the working group members in 2021 were Senator Hoffman and Senator Hughes, Senator Schauer, Senator Kawasaki, Senator Keel, Senator Gray Jackson, Representative Christ Tompkins, Representative Schrage, Representative Hopkins, Representative McCabe, Representative Prox, and myself. And also let the record reflect that the Speaker of the House, Kathy Tilton, came in at 6:04 p.m. The working group agreed on a list of necessary pieces of a comprehensive fiscal solution, including the following. Constitutional certainty for the PFD, a spending cap, a percent of market value-based PFD, a healthy capital budget, budget reductions, and new revenues. And that was the general framework that the bipartisan group was able to come up with. No specific policies or bills came out of the policy working group. This was just a framework, a discussion of a direction to head. So the working group also recognized the political challenges of achieving these recommendations and included in the report that the political solution will likely require an all-of-the-above approach to find consensus amongst the legislature. We have the full report broken down on the screen behind us for reference tonight. For those watching at home, the full report can be found on BASIS under the documents section for tonight's meeting, and the URL is listed on the screen on the title screen here behind us. So, purpose of tonight's meeting is to learn if the fiscal policy working group recommendations are still relevant several years later, in whole or in part. With that, I would like to bring our first guest invited to help answer that question. And with us tonight, former Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins will be joining us on the phone. Jonathan, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, Mr. Chair. Am I coming through okay?
You're coming through great. So Representative Christ Tompkins was instrumental in leading the working group and spent a lot of his own time putting together the report. So good evening, Representative Christ Tompkins. Will you please put yourself on the record so we can begin?
Yes, for the record, Jonathan Christ Tompkins, and I'm from Sitka. And Mr. Chair, would it make sense just to offer a couple of thoughts on the working group framework to kick things off?
Yeah, so I would kick it off with the question, do you believe the fiscal policy working group recommendations are still relevant for stabilizing the state's budget? And feel free to share your comments.
Yeah, I think the short answer to that question is yes. I think the bulleted components of a comprehensive fiscal plan that we collectively identified, and obviously there's a lot of play specifically what those would look like, but broadly speaking, I think those components are all what will ultimately be part of a fiscal plan that can pass the legislature. And I think in addition, I would just want to highlight those recommendations. You know, there's some recommendations that, for instance, I, as a Democrat, found it very easy to support, like the potential of, new revenues. That's something I've long been supportive of. You know, it's easy for me to support, but there's also some recommendations in there, like spending cap reform, constitutional certainty for the permanent fund dividend that I'm more cautious towards. And I would just highlight or underline the language in the report that says positions for each member on any single provision should be understood as agreement within the context of a comprehensive solution and not agreement on any one provision in the absence of a comprehensive solution, which is just to say that I think each side will ultimately need to compromise, and there'll have to be some giving in order for there to be some getting. And I think that's sort of one of the most important recommendations I think we all agreed on coming out of the working group process.
Thank you. Do committee members have any questions for former Representative JKT?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank him and all the people who worked so hard on this report and all the recommendations. And I just want to, like I said, take a moment to thank those in the room and those who are not.
Thank you, Representative Groh. I appreciate that. Representative Allard?
Thank you. Maybe it's not on that topic. I need people to be able to speak up so I can hear them better, please. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah. Mic closer.
All right. So we will endeavor to speak closer to the mics so we can all hear. Thank you. Okay. Anything else for the group, Representative Christ Tompkins?
Yeah, I think maybe just as an elaboration on that last component, I mean, no fiscal plan in Alaska, at least it's my belief, is going to stick without some constitutional certainty. And that's going to mean, and these are all the components that we as a working group identified, constitutional certainty on the permanent fund structure as well as the size of the draw, constitutional certainty on the PFD, potentially constitutional certainty around a spending cap and or CBR reform. So, you know, at minimum, you're talking about one or two constitutional amendments that will be necessary to provide the certainty for a fiscal plan to last for a generation or a half a century or however long. And I would just sort of, as an implication of that, observe that politically speaking, it's going to be necessary for the majority and minority to work together, because no one caucus has the necessary 27 votes to will a constitutional amendment into being. And that's just sort of a political reality of compromise that, you know, bills can get passed with 21, but in order for this broader framework to actually happen, we'll have to be compromised with the minority. And you know, the earlier that those conversations can happen and the earlier that kind of give and take and compromise oriented dialogue can get going, I think the greater the likelihood that there will ultimately be success.
Thank you. Do you have some time to hang with us while a couple of the other members present? And maybe there might be some questions or some commentary.
Absolutely. Yeah, I'm at the committee's beck and call, and I'll listen on here on mute.
Okay. Thank you very much. Now I'd like to bring up Senator Mike Schauer as a member of the Fiscal Policy Working Group and ask him the same question that I asked Representative Chris Tompkins. Good evening. Can you put yourself on the record, please?
Good evening to the House Ways and Means Committee, Mr. Chairman. I am Senator Schauer. I represent District O and here to testify tonight on the Fiscal Policy Working Group report and answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. I'll pose to you the same question that I posed earlier. Do you think that the Fiscal Policy Working Group report is still relevant today?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I believe the answer to that is yes. As Representative Chris Tompkins pointed out, it is not only, I believe, is both relevant and a critical step that has to happen if this state is ever going to put its fiscal house in order, if we are ever going to be truly open for business, if we're ever going to have investment in this state so we have certainty, which is what most businesses want. They want to know that they are going to have certainty in what the tax environment's going to be, what kind of a workforce do they have available to them, will people want to live and work in this state, is it going to shrink, is it going to grow? But stability for businesses is important. One of the problems we know with Alaska is that we're not stable. We're a petro state. And so our budget goes up and down every year. The tax available to us to spend goes up and down every year. That's not stability. And we've made that worse since 2016 by fighting relentlessly over the permanent fund dividend ad nauseum. And that fight every year, we never know what it's going to be. And so we don't know if we're going to spend $1 billion, $2 billion, $2.5 billion, where are we at? Everything changes. So, and I appreciate JKT taking time, Mr. Chairman, to be on the phone tonight because I spent countless hours with him many times in China at 2 or 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning on a trip because we were working in the interim. So there's a lot of time I have with him on the phone where he went to extraordinary lengths. And we've called in others like Senator Willikowski and Fritz Pettyjohn, former senator from Alaska, who spent also countless hours with us to talk about how we might make the language work that would be acceptable on the permanent fund dividend point because that was a big point of contention. How do you put that into the Constitution in a way that doesn't lock in the formula that scared a lot of people but still gives us the certainty? Because I think that is really at the heart of this, as JKT said, is how do we create – because that was always my question was there's two problems, right? There's the math problem and the political problem. You have to solve them both. And if you don't, you don't solve the problem. And the other critical part that he mentioned here, which I will go to the process very briefly, Mr. Chairman, is a comprehensive solution must be negotiated and agreed as a whole, not taken up one part at a time. And the process at all times, keep in mind, we can realistically pass the legislature, the rule of 2111, but that the math problem and the political problem. And so I would end my initial statement, Mr. Chairman, by saying that if you do this, as some have attempted to do, by one thing at a time, it will fail. They tried this right after the Fiscal Policy Working Group to enact essentially just their own version of a statutory PFD. It failed miserably. It wasn't going to pass. Why? Because you leave certain groups out. JKT just said it. If he would like to have the taxes, I would like to have the cuts. Some people would like to have a statutory PFD. Some people would like the spending cap, and some people don't want a cap. The point of the Fiscal Policy Working Group, as Rep. McCabe and others know that we're there, is that all of us eventually were willing to step off of our positions to find a solution that would solve both problems and a comprehensive plan that doesn't leave any group behind. I don't like all of it either. There are certain things I don't agree with on it, but I also understand to move this state forward, to answer your question we started with, is it relevant? Mr. Chairman, it's not only relevant, it's critical to our future for our kids and our grandkids.
Thank you. Are there any comments or questions, Representative McKay?
Thank you, Chairman. I appreciate the opportunity, and through the chair, maybe it's just a comment and not so much of a question, but one of the first things that happened for me on this Fiscal Policy Working Group And Senator Schauer's correct. Representative Christ Tompkins was very good at talking to us individually and together. But one of the very first things that happened is, you know, I was a full PFD guy. My district wants a full PFD. They wanted a full PFD. And we had a sort of come to Jesus meeting, JKT and I, at one point, where he said, Kevin, this group is not going to pivot around your idea for a full PFD. And it was as a former negotiator, for me, it was a wake-up call. It's like, wow, okay, so he's talking compromise. And if he was willing to compromise and his side, if you will, was willing to compromise, then I realized, and I think Senator Schauer at the same, virtually the same time, and I think Senator Hughes as well, that we needed to find a way to compromise. And I think our only issue was we needed to make sure that the rest of the fiscal policy working group realized that our position in the middle was not a starting point for them. It was a compromise, and I think JKT helped them understand that we had already compromised by coming sort of to the middle or closer to the middle, and that was not a starting point to go even further into the other side. So we had many, many discussions, and I appreciate Senator Schauer's leadership as well as JKT's leadership. He did a great job, in my opinion. So,
thank you. Any other comments from committee members? Any final words?
I will, Mr. Chairman. Thank you. Just very briefly, I think JKT also highlighted this. I keep saying his name because it's good to hear his voice. We had a lot of work on this. I had probably 80 hours worth, and there's a lot of time we spent over 35 days. But I do think it's important to note as I close that parts of this can be statutory. What I didn't mention was, as he mentioned, the agreement eventually, to the angst of some, was that parts of this must be in the Constitution. They have to be. And the reason for that is not only the faith of the public, will they ever believe that we will follow like the statutory laws that we pass? We don't, and we haven't. They have a lack of faith that we will do that. And to have the certainty, as he said, for the next generation, perhaps 50 years, the Constitution is really the one method we have that to this day, by and large, we haven't been able to jump over that hurdle. It's been high enough. The judiciary has basically supported that we have to live within that construct, not the statutes. So while there are some statutory things in this fiscal policy working group solution, while there are some areas where we want to provide the ability to still be flexible and not bind future legislators, we have to have some certainty on a few of these things. And it is crystal clear that the current constitutional spending cap we know doesn't work. And it is crystal clear that unless we take the PFD off the table, we will continue to fight about it, and we will not have the stability we need. So I just think it's important to highlight that some of this is statutory and is okay to have that maneuvering, but at the same time, some of it is constitutional, and those changes need to be made. And that is an important point because that is a high bar. And this legislature is going to have to work really hard as a team to get 27 and 14. It's not just 27 in the House, it's 14 in the Senate too. That's a big lift. But without those, Mr. Chairman, we will fail. And quite frankly, we're failing our children if we can't solve these problems. It's akin to having a nice, fancy new car or an old car, and it's shiny on the outside, but when you lift the hood, it's all rusty on the inside. And that's our fiscal structure, Mr. Chairman. We need to solve that, and we need to do it soon. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Schauer. I appreciate it. Please let the record reflect that Senator Keel joined us at 6:18 p.m.
Also a member.
Pardon me?
Was he also a member?
Yes, and Senator Keel was also a member of the working group, as I previously acknowledged, and I believe I will make some time for you, Senator, to come up and speak too if you would like. Next, I would like to call invite Senator Kawasaki to come up and share his thoughts and maybe take a stab at answering the question.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, members of the committee, for having this meeting. It's 6 o'clock at night. I know folks had long days today.
Can you please put yourself on the record?
Yes, of course. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's Senator Scott Kawasaki from Fairbanks District P. And again, it's really great that this committee has been formed and is taking the job of our fiscal policy seriously. And so, you know, I don't know that I really particularly have a lot to add, but just for the folks that didn't know how we spent our months and months of summer doing. Online, in person, going back and forth in subcommittees and meeting, what kind of work that really what? You know what, the kind of work that really was I mean it was tremendous, because we had people both sides of the aisle, both chambers, folks you would think we would never agree with, Mr. Chairman, but you know, we decided to bring our policies forward, discuss a need, and really the purpose was because we have a need. We need to move the state forward. Having these discussions on what the PFD should be from year to year is not working out. It doesn't provide the stability that the legislature needs, that the governor needs, that industry, private industry, and regular everyday Alaskans need. So we came together, and with that mission, we came and we all 12 of us eventually signed on a document. We had to compromise, as Representative McCabe said, on some of the things that we brought forward. And in the end, we came up with something that would actually move the state forward. A little disappointed that it wasn't brought forward, that we didn't advance a lot after that summer in 2021. But again, I think that the work is here, the template's here, it is important. And if we could, just your committee could just pick up where we left off and refine it, I think that we've, again, though some of the members are no longer members here, some of us are, and I think that we could come up with something early in the session and early in this 33rd legislature that would be amenable. I really do believe that. And, folks see us on television fighting like cats and dogs. 90% of the time, it's actually the other way around. Like 10% of the time, we might fight like cats and dogs, Mr. Chairman. But most of the time, we actually do bring forward good policy. And this was one of those documents.
Thank you, Senator. Appreciate it. Any comments or questions from the committee? Okay. Thank you very much for your time. I would like to invite Senator Shelley Hughes up to answer the same question, if you can put yourself on the record and give us your thoughts.
Good evening, members of the House Ways and Means Committee. Thank you for inviting me. I'm Shelley Hughes, Senator from District M. That is Greater Palmer and Kinnick Fairview. Happy to be here with you to help you understand what happened with the working group and to answer your questions.
Thank you. So the question that I have posed to all the members is, do you believe that the working group report, the recommendations, are still relevant in today's fiscal climate and our situation within the legislature?
I would like to give you a very emphatic absolutely yes. And if you look on the first page of the report under background and you read the mission was to develop policy recommendations that will provide fiscal certainty to Alaskans into the future through means of achieving a balanced budget and resolving the annual dispute over the permanent fund dividend. We have not accomplished that mission. It is still relevant. We still need to accomplish it. I want to give my kudos to Representative Jonathan Christ Tompkins as well. He did an excellent job, along with his staff, a lot of work. Somebody mentioned 70 hours, somebody mentioned 80 hours. I'm going to say over 100, because when you add all the phone calls and the back and forth and reading through the materials, there was a tremendous investment. It was in between special sessions. I also want to point out to those that maybe aren't aware that we had actually very credible and highly capable staff helping us. We had Alexi Painter, who was, I believe, on helping us with getting our base understanding and knowledge. And he was with us in meetings, provided lots of documents. So it wasn't like we were just pulling things out of the sky. We had hardcore stuff that was reliable, and we looked at things from numerous angles. I want to mention that we are entering the eighth year that the PFD has been in dispute. But I also want to mention that back in the 90s, there was a call that we have a sustainable fiscal plan. In fact, the Alaska State Chamber was here last week, and their top priority is that we have a sustainable fiscal plan. And they actually said that that has been a priority of theirs for 20 years. 20 years. So I think it is time, and we hit the point, you know, and the reason we've been in this battle, as you all know, I don't need to tell you, but maybe for those listening, was when the price of oil dropped and there wasn't as much oil in the pipeline. We hit the point where Walker then vetoed the amount of the PFD, and this crazy merry-go-round started, and Willikowski had the case, and the judge basically said the appropriation powers in the Constitution trump what's in the statute. And so here we are today. So, Mr. Chair, the problem is not solved. There was definitely a give and take. But I want to take you back to even prior to this group. In 2019, I was part of the, I'm going to get the right name, but I think it was Permanent Fund Working Group. And that also was a bicameral group. And I was one of those members, and I don't think we had as many hours of meetings, but Jonathan, Representative Christ Hopkins, was on it at the time. We got paired up, and we did reports and things and really became familiar. But the end result of that working group was simply don't overdraw the permanent fund. That's as far as we got. But I want to tell you, in one of those meetings, I went out on a limb because I knew it had to be more than that. And I was, just like Representative McCabe, I was, you know, follow the statutory formula. Let's just get on with it. Let's just do it. But then I started realizing, when you look at the projections and the size of the draw from the old formula, it was quite a large draw. And you could actually build up your fund if you didn't take that big of a draw. So then I started being a little more open to a smaller draw, but then thought, well, you should still apply that 50-50 Hammond principle, and you'd grow your fund, and it would still be fair, half available for government, half available for the people's PFD. And when you looked at at the time, Governor Dunleavy was our new governor, and in his budget, he was recognizing the original formula as far as how you calculate the PFD, but he was also respecting the 5% draw. And I don't want to say this is a rough estimate, but with that smaller draw, when you applied the old original formula, you ate up roughly about 80% of the draw for the PFD and only left 20% for government, right? Well, at the same time, there were people in this building that opposed that. And they wanted about 80% for government and 20% for the PFD. So in that permanent fund working group at the time in 2019, in one of our final meetings, I went on a limb because I came from a district that was pro-original statutory formula and said, and I kind of explained what I did to you here. And I basically said, I'm willing. I said, you think about it. You got 80-20. I said, I'm willing to come to the middle at 50. Let's come. I'll take half the draw, you know, instead of 80% for the original formula. Is anybody here willing to join me in this permanent fund working group in 2019? I think you could probably hear a pin drop. It was kind of quiet for a moment, and no one stepped forward. So at that point, there wasn't anyone really willing. But after the meeting, after we gaveled out, different members on that group came up to me and said, I really wanted to come forward because I know that's what we need to do. We need to meet in the middle. And so I knew maybe when this next group started here in 21 that we might have a chance. And so I'm pleased with what we came forward. It was a monumental task. It was way overdue. And it was unique, historic, with the makeup. And I'll mention minority had equal representation. That was a very unique and interesting aspect. But one of the other things, we were led to believe that the proposed package, Mr. Chair, would be the starting point of that special session. And I'm disappointed it wasn't. But I think it is still relevant and could be a starting point for us this time, if there are enough. But I also want to say, after we came down here, I think the report dropped on August 16, 2021. And as members that had been working together over the summer, we connected a number of times in that first week because we were all going back to our caucuses, talking about the report, and we were getting feedback as far as who in the building was supporting it. And we came back together, and I don't know who all was there, if all eight of us or who was in the room, but I remember having a discussion that we had a sense when we started counting noses, as far as in our caucuses, we figured there was close to 50 out of 60 people in this building that were interested in moving this plan forward and having hearings. About 10 who weren't. We had no hearings in the Senate. I believe the House may have had a hearing, but nothing really moved forward. So I want to make that point. And you may say, well, why didn't it move forward? Well, you know how it is. You have different chairs. And if something needs to move through a certain committee and that chair's not supportive, then it's likely not going to go anywhere. And that's kind of what happened. But there actually was broad support. We have different people in the building now. So I think it's very relevant. I love your word relevant to bring it up again, because we have people that have were elected. And I'm aware that some people that are new in this building campaigned on doing this plan. So I think it is something that we should have the conversation. One of the things that if we do move forward, that I want to point out, it was something I think I got kept repeating it and eventually got in the final report, is you always have to keep in mind an achievable support, not only in the legislature, but in the public arena. So you have to be very aware of that. So it's not just a matter of 11 and 21, but will the public, especially for those bookends, the constitutional pieces, you have to make sure it will pass muster with the public. And back to the state chamber coming last week, they actually did have a pretty recent poll. Their most recent poll is, I can't remember exactly, but over 60% of Alaskans support a constitutional spending cap. So there's one piece. We know the public would support that. Can we get the 14 and 27? That's a high bar, but I think it's what we need to do. And I also want to say, just because there are revenue pieces that are being discussed by the administration, I want to make sure we don't put the cart before the horse. We do know this has to move together, but when you think about it, just logistically and practically, your things that are in stone, your bookends, the parameters, are the pieces in the Constitution. So that spending cap and what you're going to spend on the PFD, you kind of have to have that first. You could hold off implementing it because this has to be a package deal. That's part of what we agreed on. But you kind of you have to know where those land, because you can't figure out the other piece, which is the revenue and reduction piece. So it is incumbent upon this legislature, I think, to think about these constitutional amendments. We've been wrapped around the axle for 8 years. Alaskans want us to be big girls, big boys, and get this done. And I believe they support it. And it also, another reason why it's relevant, Mr. Chair, as we've been on this crazy roller coaster ride with this, there have been important topics and important issues that we have not been able to really focus on and get done. And so it's kept us, distracted us, and that's not good for the state of Alaska. In fact, I will say something, I hope this isn't too alarming to see, but I've been here during those 8 years. And I will say when some people came on one side of the PFD and others were on the other, we still initially worked on other bills and things together. It didn't matter if someone wasn't for the original formula, if they had a bill, we'd get on board, vice versa. What I saw the last couple of years, which was really disturbing to me, is sometimes those fractures on the PFD were causing people to stop other bills on totally different subjects, whether it be sexual assault or something totally unrelated to the PFD. That's dysfunctional. So I think these are really strong words, what I'm saying, but I believe that we have to step up, and we have to be the leaders that people ask us to be. And we have to, and I think it is relevant to bring it up when we have an unusually high number of new members in the legislature, because I think it's time to count noses like we did too, and then see, do we have chairs that are willing to move this thing forward? So I appreciate the fact that you brought this forward, and I'm sorry I talked a lot longer than the other speakers.
Thank you, Senator Hughes, for your lengthy answer, and it strikes me as there's two points that I would just like to communicate to you that I took away from that. One of them is the history of the previous PFD group and the nature of change within the organization. What we're seeing that is hard. It's hard to do, and there has to be some sort of commitment to overcome that inertia to do nothing. And I appreciate that. The second thing that you talked about was what I would term the opportunity cost of further delay. Like, what is it costing our economy?
Oh, I have
to not do.
I actually have a specific on that. So, I don't know the date that the ICER presented to us and talked about the uncertainty, but I had held a hearing in Community and Regional Affairs about economic development in our communities, and we brought ICER, and we kind of talked about it, and they basically said that the uncertainty, we are losing about $500 million in capital investment in our private sector per year. So think about $500 million now on average. He gave a range of $220 million to $660 million, and that was a few years ago. So that's in 4 years. That's $2 billion loss of capital investment to strengthen our economy. Think how many years we've been uncertain. So you're talking a lot of tremendous missed opportunity because of the uncertainty, and it's real dollars. It's real dollars and jobs.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. I appreciate it. Any comments or questions from the committee? Representative McCain.
Thanks. And through the chair, Senator Hughes, so I know the answer to this, but I just want to make you say it so everybody can hear it. Did we design this for just 1 year, or did we specifically design this for the ages, if you will, or to be sort of portable?
We designed it to be lasting. When you're talking about a fiscal plan, you're not talking about a one-year plan. You're talking about something sustainable and ongoing. And so the proposal still stands. Of course, we might want to look at a few updates and numbers and things, but it's really principles, and I want to applaud Representative Christ Tompkin to help us articulate it and get it into the report. But anybody could read it today and say, hey, this still seems like a good idea, and these are things that have not been yet accomplished, and it's up to the legislature to get the ball rolling and do it.
Follow up. Thanks. So one more thing, and I know the answer to this again because I actually did them, but you mentioned Mr. Painter, the head of Ledge Finance, and his help. Maybe for the public so they can understand exactly what we did, can you explain a little bit about the models and the spreadsheets and that sort of thing that Mr. Painter actually built specifically for this committee, for the Fiscal Policy Working Group, and kind of what we did a little bit?
So when the chair asked me to be on this, I said, don't let me be the one in the technical spots because I'm a high-level person. But I will tell you, we had to come to agreement on different things because I could assume something, you could assume something else. So we had to come together on assumptions, on the revenues, on the projections, and looking at the budget. And one of the interesting things, because I believe one of the prior speakers talks about some people on one side of the political spectrum might be more excited about pieces and those on the other about the other pieces. But one thing we did do, which I thought was a fascinating exercise with Mr. Painter, the legislative finance director, was to each of us come up with lists of possible reductions, not that we know exactly how they would work. And it was pretty fascinating what we came up with. And I was really impressed that the Democrats were coming up with a list of reductions. And I think there were a few of ours they weren't real wild about, but we were all wild about theirs.
I suspect that Mr. Painter put in a fair amount of time in creating that spreadsheet, and I would hazard guess that he didn't delete it afterwards. So if that was something that the committee wanted to take a look at, I would be willing to ask him to see if he still has it. Representative Groh.
Thank you, Chair Crumpter. Senator Hughes, through the chair, I've heard that each of the eight members of the bipartisan bicameral working group essentially built their own budget. I mean, built their. So could you describe how that worked a little bit for the committee?
Well, it was a homework assignment, as I remember, and then we had to submitted, I believe, to Alexei, and he let us know if it would work or not. And it was a fascinating process. Maybe, I don't know if the chair, Representative McCabe, can remember more exactly how that went. I remember, I think I was traveling. It was really tricky to get my assignment done.
What I remember is that it looked like it was probably an awful simple process for an economist, but was fairly detailed for us, or at least for me, Representative McCabe.
So if you don't mind, so we did have homework. JKT gave us homework. He gave us a spreadsheet that Alexei built, and he said, well, if you're so smart, here. And we had to figure out, well, if you cut this budget here, or if you cut this here, then this happens over here. And he had all the formulas put in there, and we even went into some of those, or I did anyways, some of the formulas, and I changed the formula to see what that would do. And I found it fascinating. I probably still have a couple dozen of them on my computer, and they are, if the committee wants them, they're a fascinating look. Maybe Alexei could update them for our current numbers, but it's a fascinating way to look at what happens when you cut this budget here, or what happens when you do a full PFD and that sort of stuff. It was pretty amazing. That's what I was trying to get you to say, Senator Hughes, but I forgot that you were traveling. So, but yeah, the homework was really fascinating. So
thank you all. Any other comments or questions? Okay. Thank you, Senator Hughes. I would now like to invite Senator Keel to come up. He didn't know he was going to be invited to do this. We didn't talk beforehand, but sir, you are willing, invited to answer the question. Is this still relevant?
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, members of the...
And please put yourself on the record. Thank
for
you.
The record, I am Jesse Keel. I have the unmitigated privilege of serving as a senator for Senate District B, where all of you sit today. I'm honored to have you here in the capital city. And like the other presenters to you today, I served on the bipartisan bicameral fiscal policy working group, and I appreciate the little trip down Amnesia Lane as we recall. I was taking my daughter to see a couple of colleges she was interested in potentially applying for. She was overjoyed and delighted at all the time I spent on the telephone and on the Zoom and working through spreadsheets and constitutional opinions and at least she has some interesting stories to tell and can have a really good conversation with her college classmates now. The answer to your question, Mr. Chairman, is unmitigatedly yes. This is still relevant. As we look at our current budget situation, we are a little more comfortable right now with the price of oil, but we're in no better position in the long term. When the price of oil, and it's never if, it's when the price of oil goes back down, we're going to be right where we were a couple of years ago. The savings balance is a little bit smaller. It's going to bounce up and down a little bit. The price of oil is going to bounce up and down a lot, as history has taught us. It looks like in a couple of years' time, we'll probably get a bump in production. That won't last either. Alaska is on the track it's been on, and we haven't done anything to step off that track. The work of the fiscal policy of this working group was an attempt to stabilize our future. And the recommendations we came up with, I think, accomplish that. I can guarantee you, I can guarantee anybody listening, that there are parts of it each one of us hated and still don't like today and would have to hold our noses pretty darn hard and long to vote for. But when you put it all together, these pieces give Alaska, the state of Alaska, a financial future to serve the constituents we're all sent here to serve. Different values, different priorities, but certain essential needs that have to be met. So I continue to feel very strongly that the recommendation for new revenues, and while we didn't settle on a specific revenue source, the need for something broad-based is essential to Alaska's long-term future so that we don't remain the only state in the union where a healthy, growing economy and a growing population is bad for the state budget. That is an inverse, a perverse incentive for state government. We should be, all of us, left, right, center, invested in more jobs. I agree with the governor's end of the state of the state when he said we should have a growing population. But at some point, there have to be revenues to pay for the services that those people all need from state government. There are some things we got to do together. There are pieces of this that I disagree with. I think, and I've told the actually told the Chamber of Commerce this during their fly-in, the notion of constitutional spending limits are incredibly risky. They have the potential for disaster. The notion that our generation knows the proper size of government and no generation to come after us could get it right if they disagree is hubris. There are things we could do that mitigate the risk, right? I actually talked with then Representative, now Senator Kaufman. He has a spending limit amendment that's not insane. Mr. Chairman, that's the best you're going to get out of me on spending limits, as you will recall. I actually told him that to his face. There are parts of this that are going to be extremely hard. And the members of the group will recall, especially one of them sitting right next to you, that we barked at each other more than a little bit in this process. The reason we did it was to get to that stability. The reason we did it was to create a potential for Alaska's future that Senator Hughes talked about, where private sector investment has a sense that this is a place they can build a future. They can build a business and all the prosperity that's going to come with that. So I appreciate Senator Hughes' great example, but excuse me, but maybe I won't talk quite that long. I would be very happy to take any questions from members of the committee, and thank you so much for holding this hearing and bringing these issues back up. We're going to need to work on it.
Thank you, Senator. Any questions or comments from the committee? All right. Thank you for being willing impromptu here.
My pleasure.
Appreciate it. I do understand that, JKT, you have some comments that you would like to make. Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to circle back to the modeling exercise that has been mentioned a couple of times. And there's two things I want to say about that. The first is in the working group report, the bottom of page two, the first thing that we all did, and I think this actually took us probably something like 30 to 40% of the total time we as a working group were together, was agree on what the problem was, which is adopt a common set of fiscal assumptions so that when we model the problem and also model what solutions would actually create a sustainable balanced budget for Alaska, we're all working from the same definition of the problem and the same fiscal parameters. And that's something that I think generally in the legislature does not happen. Everybody uses a set of fiscal assumptions that maybe in good faith make sense to them, but also don't make sense to the person down the hall. And I think that was a really, really important part of our process. And the common set of fiscal assumptions that we as a group adopted, which I think you're right, Mr. Chair and Representative Kate Alexi has on file, I think that's really, really important. And then the second thing I wanted to say is the exercise that has been referenced tonight, where all eight of us or 12 of us, if you count alternates on the working group, basically we're sort of in a balanced budget box, and all of us had to work from the common set of fiscal assumptions and effectively create a sustainable balanced budget as deemed balanced by Alexi. So there was no cheating. We couldn't sort of take a convenient shortcut by using some fuzzy math or whatever. And just the numbers had to work. And I thought that was a really helpful exercise for me personally. I think for all of us. Frankly, I think it would be a great sort of onboarding exercise for all 60 legislators at the start of session, just sort of be taken over to the Ledge Finance Building, put in a room, given that model, and be forced to balance the budget. And I mean, maybe that's something that individual members should take upon themselves, in this next week or two. But just those two pieces I thought were important, really, really important to have a common definition of the problem. And I think our ability to do that as a group was a foundation for everything that ultimately was in the report as far as recommendations. And the second piece is that balanced budget exercise that we all did. I think it's a really important exercise because numbers don't lie, and being able to make the math work is just ultimately what this is all about.
Thank you, Representative Grace Tompkins. I appreciate your comments. I will get in touch with Alexi and see if we can't make the balance sheet. I'm not sure what to title it, but the Excel spreadsheet available to the legislature so that they can tinker with it. Anyway, this is kind of going off script, but Representative Ortiz, Representative Gray, Senator Myers, do you feel compelled to share any thoughts tonight in regards to this, Senator Myers? Let the record reflect that Representative Eastman joined us at 6:51 p.m. Please put yourself on the record and give us your thoughts.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Robert Myers, Senator for District Q these days. If whoever's got the slides could move it back one to the go another one back. It's the it was the policy statement. The, I think we're going the wrong direction. Anyway, Mr. Chairman, as we're looking for that real quick here, I was not on the working group, but you know, unfortunately, my time available that summer was not possible. A lot of what is being discussed, what was discussed by the working group, what's now being discussed by this committee, is why I ran for office. What I got concerned about first as a private citizen, and then once I got into the legislature for the last 6, 8, 10 years now, is I'm very concerned that the legislature is so laser focused on the budget, fixing the budget for this year, fixing the budget for next year, that we're not talking about what does this look like in 10 or 12 years or 20 years, and what does this do to our economy in 10 or 20 years. And effectively, the question that I am trying to ask is not how do we fix our budget. The question I'm trying to ask is it a good idea to fund the vast majority of our state's budget from the permanent fund? Because what that does to us is our government will pay attention to and be dependent on wherever its money is coming from. And what that means is that if we are dependent on oil, our government pays attention to the oil in our coming out of our economy. If we are dependent on some other portion of our economy for our government's funds, then our government's going to make sure that that portion of the economy stays healthy. Instead, our government, in moving the direction that we've slowly been going the last 6, 8, 10 years, if our government is going to be dependent upon the revenues coming from the stock market, then we no longer have a government that's accountable to the people of Alaska. We have a government that is going to be paying attention to Wall Street. And I get very concerned about that, Mr. Chair. And Senator Hughes touched on it a little bit. Senator Keel touched on it a little bit, that what happens, really what we need to be concerned about, is not just our state budget, but our state's economy. I ran some numbers over the last couple of years. I took a look at the growth of our permanent fund compared to the growth of our economy. And for the 20 years previous to COVID, because COVID doesn't count, I'm not going to use those numbers. Our state's economy grew by about 1.5% a year, once you account for inflation. Conversely, our permanent fund grew at 2.7% a year. What happens to our government and what happens to our economy once your government can grow at 50% faster of a rate than your economy can grow? Do you care about resource development? I do. What that tells me is that we'll have enough money coming to our government that we could regulate resource development out of existence in this state, and our state government won't feel the effects. Do you care about small business and people being able to find a future, make a living outside of the government sphere? I do. Senator Keel mentioned it. He was spot on. All of a sudden, any sort of economic development now becomes a cost to government, not a benefit. That's a scary thought, Mr. Chair. And so my
message, and I've talked to a couple people on the committee, a couple of people, other people in the room here, to the committee, to the legislature in general, to the people of Alaska, is let's stop and think not just how are we going to fix our budget, because unfortunately our election cycles make us think no more than 2 years down the line. What we need to think about is what are our actions going to be doing, setting us up for 10 or 20 years down the line. And I see a shortage of that kind of thinking in the legislature, Mr. Chair.
Thank you for sharing your thoughts, Senator Myers. I pose the same question to you. Do you think that the Fiscal Policy Working Group report, the recommendations, help alleviate the concern that you've shared tonight?
Mr. Chair, if we don't follow the Fiscal Policy Working Group recommendations, I see us going down a very dark road in Alaska. And it's going to be a place where in 10 years when my kids start graduating high school, I'm going to have to tell them to leave state. If we don't follow the recommendations, or at least something close to what has been mentioned in here, this is not going to be a state that I'm going to want to live in.
Thank you, Senator. I appreciate it. Any comments from the committee? Representative Allard.
Thank you, Senator Myers. I just wanted to say that last comment you made was very candid. That was a risky move, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
Any other comments? Okay. Well, we are about 5 minutes to the top of the hour, and we've covered the business of the committee today, so I see no reason to keep us here much longer. I would like to thank our guests and the guests in the audience here and those watching online for listening in. I'd like to thank the members of the Fiscal Policy Working Group who came and shared their thoughts today. I am personally thankful that we can continue to have this conversation, even though the politics of the building and whatnot might make it a little dangerous. So I really do appreciate that. So I'm closing invited testimony. I don't see that there's any additional comments from the committee here. Oh, Representative Groh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm up 80 hours, 120 hours, wherever you want. I just want to let you know that I'm perfectly willing to build on and actually implement this fine work that's been done that you labored and others labored so much on in 2021.
Thank you.
I consider it highly relevant.
Thank you. Well, it seems like you might be on the right committee. All right. Well, this concludes our business for today. We'll be adjourned at 6:58 p.m.